not too long ago that the same thing happened to me. They tried to defame me, arrest me for opposing and speaking. They manipulated the issue, and they closed down my social media accounts as well. I think the police were involved in pushing, you know, some pressure against social media like Instagram and so on. But, you know, I'm not going to stop fighting for the oppressed people.
Good for you. Exactly. Thank you so much for that. Farrell Sanajim speaking there, manager of the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights from Toronto. Thank you. Marzi, thank you. It's good to see you. Marzi Hashemi, host of the Press TV's Hidden Files.
Pleasure.
And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikova Tavway and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Qul inna salati wa nusuki wa mahyaya wa mamati lillahi rabbil alameen la sharika lah wa bithalika umirtu wa ana awalul muslimin qul غير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات لأبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك سريع العقاب وإنه لغفور رحيم.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed, and He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: Iran urges Western regimes to stop hosting and backing terrorists instead of lecturing it on how to handle riots. The US plans to send over $270 million of anti-drone and air defense equipment to Ukraine. Also ahead, political unrest continues in Peru as police clash with supporters of ousted President Pedro Castillo, demanding his release and closure of Congress. Starting this bulletin in Iran, which has slammed Western countries' interventionist remarks on the recent riots in the country, accusing them of harboring terrorists. In a string of tweets, the foreign ministry underlined that public security remains a red line for the Islamic Republic, stressing that armed assaults and vandalism are not tolerable. It said the country has shown utmost restraint in countering the rioters and employed proportionate and standard anti-riot methods. The ministry slammed the West for hypocritically lecturing the Islamic Republic. It said instead of spreading lies through politicized statements, the West must stop hosting, backing, and encouraging terrorists. Riots began following the death of a young woman in hospital days after she collapsed at a police station. Since then, some Western countries have been waging psychological warfare and fueling unrest in Iran. Meanwhile, illegal weapons entering Iran have surged during the past few months. Or foreign sponsors of the recent riots have been planning to arm rioters to destabilize the country while stoking insecurity as well. But Iranian security forces have successfully foiled several of these arms smuggling operations, sending a strong message to the enemies of Iran that peace and stability are the country's red line.
Ever since the riots began in September, anti-Iran media has been depicting the situation as a violent crackdown on so-called peaceful protesters. For the past 2 months, they have been running a propaganda campaign to further pressure Iran under the pretext of violating human rights. But are these peaceful protesters? Iran's intelligence ministry has recently reported the confiscation of a huge cache of weapons and equipment used by terrorists. In fact, Iranian security forces have thwarted several arms smuggling operations and dismantled a number of operational cells affiliated with the terrorist organizations such as MKO. This comes as the illegal influx of weapons into the country is on the rise recently. The confiscated weapons were supposed to be transferred to Iran to be used in the recent riots. Last month, in an interview with the Persian service of the British state-funded broadcaster BBC, former White House National Security Advisor John Bolton said the, quote, Iranian opposition is now being armed with weapons. Bolton added that these arms are being smuggled into the country from the Iraq's Kurdistan region, praising the use of force against Iran's security forces. The recent foreign-backed riots in Iran have claimed hundreds of lives belonging to both security forces and ordinary people. In addition, by conducting acts of vandalism, violence, and insecurity, rioters have paved the way for separatist and terrorist groups to infiltrate the country and carry out brutal attacks against innocent people. Smuggling huge amounts of weapons into Iran to be used in the recent foreign-backed unrest is merely aimed at undermining the country's security. But Iranian officials have time and again stated that Iran's security is a red line that no one is allowed to cross. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Eutelsat has informed the Press TV of plans to suspend its services to the Iranian broadcaster. The European satellite operator says the potential move is in line with the EU sanctions targeting Iranian individuals and entities, including Press TV, over Iran's response to the recent riots.
Eutelsat is a French satellite operator providing coverage over the entire European continent, the Middle East, Africa, Asia, and the Americas. It's the world's third largest satellite operator in terms of revenues. The decision came weeks after the European Union imposed sanctions on Iran's English language news network. The move was part of recent sanctions by the European Union, which were imposed on Iran after the recent riots there. The bloc has sanctioned 29 individuals and three organizations, including Press TV. It has accused the Iranian news channel of airing, quote, forced confessions of detainees. Press TV has rejected those claims.
I've been working here at Press TV for almost a decade now, and I can tell you that Press TV has not aired any confessions whatsoever, forced or unforced. So that shows you how such decisions by the EU and the like are based on unfounded claims with no basis in reality. And these sanctions on Press TV I see as part of the media war and their narrative control. They want to present the war with their distorted version of what's going on in Iran these days, and seemingly they don't feel much comfortable with Press TV challenging their narrative. So they would try everything to silence us or make us less heard, but we're not going to be silenced.
IRIB chief Peyman Jebelli has strongly condemned EU's move, saying that it's not the first time the West has acted against its own claims of being the defender of the freedom of expression. Sanctions imposed on Press TV by the EU and earlier by the government of Canada are aimed at muzzling free speech and alternative views. Press TV has made a great effort to counter fake narratives fostered by Western media concerning the recent riots in Iran.
Well, it's not the first time that Western governments have tried to block Press TV. The channel's website, YouTube account, and other social media platforms have been targeted multiple times before. Press TV says the move is part of the West's attempts to silence the voice of the Iranian people. It has also criticized the West's double standards on freedom of speech.
This is not the first time Press TV has been attacked by Western powers. In July 2013, Press TV was forced off the air in the UK after the media regulator Ofcom revoked its license for allegedly breaching the Communications Act. In April 2012, Munich-based media regulator BLM announced it was removing Press TV from the SES Astra satellite, as it purportedly did not have a license to broadcast in Europe. And in November 2012, the Hong Kong-based AsiaSat took Iranian channels off air in East Asia. Furthermore, in October 2012, Intelsat stopped broadcasting several Iranian satellite channels, though the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting managed to resume broadcasts after striking deals with smaller companies that are based in other countries. Press TV has also repeatedly fallen victim to censorship on multiple internet-based social media platforms, including Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and etc.
Well, this gesture by the West is not anything new in terms of Press TV and even some of its, sister channels. So it puts under the microscope the real intention behind this. So the way this appears to be is that it's part of a bigger picture of this maximum pressure campaign that's been exerted on Iran. I am sure there's some geopolitical interest involved in terms of trying to limit Iran's reach when it comes to the media. But in particular, obviously, another reason for this act by the West, which is really against the pillars that they actually advocate, which is freedom of speech.
Over the past years, Facebook, along with YouTube, Twitter, and Google, have repeatedly targeted media outlets of Iran. In 2013, the U.S. Treasury Department announced sanctions against the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, or the IRIB, to silence alternative voices. Press TV was dropped from the Galaxy 19 satellite platform that allowed it to broadcast in the United States and Canada without saying when it was dropped.
Iran's foreign minister has censured Western countries for exacerbating the war in Ukraine by pumping weapons into the Eastern European country. Hossein Abi Abdullahian was speaking in a phone call with his Finnish counterpart. He said Iran is opposed to the continuation of the Ukraine war and believes the West's unlimited arms supplies to Kiev have further complicated the circumstances. The U.S. and its Western allies have been providing Ukraine with billions of dollars in weapons and ammunition since Russia launched the war in February. Moscow says such supplies only prolong the conflict. Last month, a CNN report revealed the U.S. was running low on weapons and ammunition to send to Ukraine. Other reports have said Washington is sending Ukraine old weapons the U.S. military has stopped using itself. And the Russian president has reacted to reports about attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure, saying they came in response to Kiev's strikes on Russia's power lines. Vladimir Putin also accused Ukraine of not supplying water to the Russian-controlled Donetsk region.
Right now, there has been a lot of uproar about our attacks on the energy infrastructure of the neighboring country. Yes, we're doing it, but who started it? Who hit the Crimean Bridge? Who blew up the power lines from the Kursk nuclear power plant? Who isn't supplying water to Donetsk?
Putin said such Ukrainian acts amounted to genocide. He also said that the international uproar over these strikes would not hinder Russia's combat missions in Ukraine. Russian authorities accuse Ukrainian forces of heavily shelling Donetsk, but the Ukrainian side denies the allegation of targeting own civil population. The war in Ukraine is in its 10th month now. Both Russia and Ukraine have stepped up their attacks in recent weeks, with each side blaming the other for targeting civilians and not or non-military positions. The United States is reportedly preparing to send a fresh military aid package to Kiev to be used in the war against Russia, despite Moscow's repeated warnings. The new package, worth $275 million, is aimed at strengthening Ukraine's air defense systems and capabilities. It is expected to include HIMARS rockets, ammunition, and armored vehicles, as well as anti-drone equipment. The new package raises Washington's total military assistance to Ukraine to over $19 billion. On Thursday, U.S. lawmakers voted to provide Ukraine at least $800 million in additional security aid next year. Washington's allies, such as Britain, France, and Sweden, have also been sending aid packages for Ukraine. Moscow, however, has time and again warned that continued supply of Western weapons and military equipment to Kiev will only prolong the war. As battle rages around the northern Donbass town of Bakhmut, both sides are launching strikes on other cities. While Russia targets energy infrastructure, our correspondent reports on Ukrainian targeting of civilians in Donetsk.
Kubashevsky district, Donetsk. A child is wounded by Ukrainian shelling. An ambulance took her to the hospital. But a second didn't arrive fast enough, so a local volunteer, Andrei, puts the child's mother in the back of his van and drives her there himself. Ukraine has a history of shelling civilians in Donetsk since 2014. Over recent days, they've increased the slaughter. More than a dozen have been killed in the last 4 days. Nowhere in the city is safe. Two supermarkets were hit in the space of 2 days.
The city has been hit hard today. Multiple strikes around the center. The death toll is already up to 5. We're racing around the city to check out the damage.
We pass a market. It caught on fire due to a strike. Flowers are placed outside for a woman killed at the same spot a few weeks ago. We arrive at the site of another strike. There's a body on the ground, and two more inside.
Now, while many of the attacks by Ukraine and Donetsk are aimed at civil infrastructure, administration buildings, some are simple terror attacks against civilians. The building here is a youth center. The woman who was killed is still lying just down there, covered in a blanket.
The woman was later identified as Maria Pirogova, a young deputy of the DPR authorities. Another killed was Vadim Lobozov, a singer in a music band.
Now, I've tried to talk to a couple of people at the scene here, but they didn't want to. They're simply too traumatized to speak. One man breaking down in tears by the side of the road. In fact, my fixer, my translator, is very keen for us to get out of here, because at any moment, these strikes can happen again. Right across the city, they've been happening today. And no doubt there'll be more anytime soon.
Andrei, the volunteer who took the mother to the hospital in Kubayevsky.
They shell the center of Donetsk on purpose, to scare people, to create an unstable zone in the city, so that people will complain, to provoke. To me, they're not warriors who fight with other warriors. They fight civilians. So I think they do not deserve to be called military. They should be classified as war criminals by a military court.
While Russia launches major attacks on energy infrastructure, in a shockingly underreported story, Ukraine is launching attacks on civilians, whom it claims to be its own citizens. Few people are on the streets today, as more strikes are expected. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
Turning to other news now, there are now more food banks in the UK than there are McDonald's. That's a sad story. Soaring inflation and energy price hikes are forcing more Britons to rely on food aid to avoid starvation. And with the cold season already here, charities are warning things are going to turn a turn for the worse for millions of Britons. Supporters of ousted Peruvian President Pedro Castillo have held a second day of protests demanding his release and the closure of Congress. The protesters clashed with police in the capital, Lima. Castillo's supporters gathered outside the penitentiary center where he is being detained. A court on Thursday ordered him to stay there for at least 7 days as an inquiry into alleged crimes of rebellion and conspiracy goes on. A day earlier, lawmakers voted overwhelmingly to remove Castillo from office. That followed his failed attempt to rule by decree and dissolve Congress to avoid a third impeachment vote. The MPs had been pushing to impeach Castillo over multiple corruption scandals, which he denies. He took office just 17 months ago. That brings an end to our international bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
In the limelight. An increasing number of German people will forego the tradition due to soaring prices. According to reports, one in four Germans won't buy Christmas gifts this year. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT noted almost a quarter of Germans won't buy Christmas presents this year because of high inflation. Bild newspaper reported recently, citing a survey by the Institute for New Social Answers, INSA. According to the report, 23% of respondents said they will not buy Christmas presents at all, while 22% said they will have to use their savings to buy gifts. A further 3% said they may be forced to incur debts to buy presents. Overall, less than half of those surveyed said they will be able to fit Christmas purchases into their budget. The report did not provide data on the number of participants in the survey. Bild also noted that the cost of Christmas gifts in Germany this year has grown by around 56% compared to 2021, according to price comparison platform Idealo, which analyzed prices of more than 120 popular Christmas presents. Germany's annual inflation rate jumped to 10.4% in October, hitting a new historic high, according to data from the Federal Statistical Office. While the agency has not published data for November yet, it expects the inflation rate to have remained above 10%. The prices are costly, driven by rising energy costs, which surged following the drop in gas supplies from Russia amid Ukraine-related Western sanctions on the country. Last month, INSA conducted another survey which found that half of Germans think Berlin is failing to combat the energy crisis, while nearly 30% say they will not be able to pay for energy in the coming month. Newspaper Bild reported a Christmas decoration manufacturer in the German state of Saxony may close down due to sanctions on Russian timber. The company in question specializes in Shivogen, traditional carved wooden arches with Christmas themes used as candle holders. According to the report, the company, which has produced these decorations for 30 years, has seen its warehouse stocks dwindle ever since the EU ban on Russian timber and wood products came into force earlier this year. The company's owner, Katia Tallinn, told the news outlet that while her company usually makes the decorations all year round, work is now carried out only by special order and that she had to raise prices due to the lack of supplies. Since the summer, we stopped receiving Russian birch plywood, whose market share prior to sanctions was 93%. Like all our colleagues, we have been trying to figure out for months how we can replace Russian wood, but it is pointless, Tallinn stated, noting that the quality of alternatives to Russian raw materials is unsuitable. Brussels sanctioned Russian timber on April 9, with a transition period lasting until July for companies whose import contracts were signed before that date. Restrictions targeted timber and wood products, charcoal, wood pulp, cardboard, as well as wooden furniture and furniture parts. However, according to Russian forest regulator Roslyn Ford, the company has been able to continue selling timber products to the EU through third countries. Krasny News Agency also wrote in this regard, nearly a quarter of Germans say they will not purchase Christmas gifts this year due to rampant inflation, according to a representative poll conducted by the Institute for New Social Answers. The survey commissioned by German newspaper Bild revealed that 23% of respondents will not buy any Christmas presents at all, while less than half of those sampled indicated that they will be able to fit purchases for the festive season in their regular income, Sputnik reported. A further 22% said they will fall back on their savings, with 3% saying they may even incur debts. According to the newspaper, German price comparison platform analyzed prices for over 120 popular Christmas gifts and compared them with the last year's prices. The findings revealed that 56% of Christmas presents are now more expensive than in 2021. There was no information concerning the time frame and a scale of the poll.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Midstream.
China is seeking to increase its influence in the Arab world, in particular with Saudi Arabia at a summit this month. There has been no announcement about which countries will attend the event, and Beijing has not yet confirmed if President Xi Jinping will be present. This Chinese caution indicates a fear of failure that might be caused by the possibility of the Saudis retreating from taking the path under American threats or temptations. Since for now, it seems that the Saudi policy towards China is somewhat made in America, meaning it is determined by the degree of bin Salman's alienation from the Biden administration. Nevertheless, Beijing will not miss a serious opportunity to fill in the U.S.'s position, or at least compete with it in a region that sits on a huge amount of global oil reserves and imports huge quantities of Chinese products. It is an opportunity that first appeared when the United States decided to reduce its presence in the Middle East to divert its efforts against Beijing to East Asia, according to the policy drawn up by American strategists during the presidency of Barack Obama. That approach was seen by the Saudis as a great threat, especially since back then it was followed by silence about the arrival of the Muslim Brotherhood to power in Egypt and Tunisia, and the nuclear deal with Iran that was negotiated behind Riyadh's back, according to Saudis. What China is not reassured about is the deception that it could be exposed to from Persian Gulf Arab regimes that are confused about how to guarantee their future at a moment of historic buoyancy as a result of global transformations that no one knows how they will end, especially after the Ukraine war. Nonetheless, the Ukraine war has benefited those Arab regimes by helping increase oil prices and allowing those regimes to establish a circumstantial alliance with Russia and basically blackmail the Americans. However, China's concerns are valid. For example, Beijing was until recently participating in the construction of a dual-purpose naval facility, both for civil and military purposes, in Abu Dhabi. But the construction stopped after serious objection from the United States towards the Emiratis. There's no doubt that the United States of America closely monitors China's moves in West Asia and specifically monitors the behavior of the Persian Gulf Arab states towards Beijing. As the Americans do this, their goal is not specifically to hit the commercial partnership between the Arabian Peninsula and China, which amounts to several hundred billion dollars annually. Rather, the Americans definitely monitor Persian Gulf countries crossing certain red lines, which the U.S. deems the borderline between strife and animosity, like aiming for strategic and military partnership with Beijing. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. For the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to invite the Chinese President Xi Jinping to attend three summits with Saudi Arabia, the Persian Gulf states, and the Arab countries depicts a new direct challenge to the Americans, for whom the kingdom has never hosted such summits except for U.S. administration's sake. Hence, changing the identity of the guest of honor sends a message that the Saudis are ready to replace the USA with China as a new ally if the United States continues its policy of abandoning Saudi Arabia. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Mr. Matez Wahwah, political commentator. Thank you very much, Matez, for being with us. Now, everyone's monitoring the upcoming Arab-Chinese summit that's going to take place in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia in the first 10 days of December, supposedly next week. And they are all looking to see if President Xi Jinping will be attending. But what message is Riyadh sending to the United States of America with such a new rapprochement with China?
Well, assuming that President Jinping attends the summit in Riyadh, the welcoming is supposed to be one that we haven't seen since Donald Trump's visit to Riyadh. And I think the message is very clear from Riyadh, and especially from MBS, that Saudi Arabia does have other options. They can go looking elsewhere, and they can go strengthening alliances and taking up trade deals and even arms and manufacturing deals with the United States' rival in the world, on the world scale. And I think that this is something that Mohammed bin Salman will be pushing for. This is the type of message that he will be driving with such a summit, especially considering the fact that other Arab leaders will be attending the summit, leaders that have been invited by Mohammed bin Salman.
Well, there's a lot of speculation as to the possibility of the Chinese president actually making it. Why do you think there's a speculation, or maybe this is just what the mainstream media is trying to portray, that he might do the trip?
Yeah, well, I think the speculation is aimed at keeping the United States on its toes. I think right now Saudi Arabia does not want to show all of its cards at the moment. It is locked in a sort of... I wouldn't say a cold war, but a sort of a cold face-off between, it's a game of poker between Saudi Arabia and the United States. And I think they want to see if the United States will call its bluff. Is it a bluff at all? Who will fold their cards first? This is the sort of game that Mohammed bin Salman is currently playing with the U.S.
Well, this is why we're hearing a lot of analysts saying that this Saudi policy is basically made in USA, meaning that it is determined by the degree of alienation of Mohammed bin Salman from the Biden administration and their attacks against him, especially in the media. But can a country like China, which is slowly and carefully crawling to wrest global leadership from the United States of America, base its strategies on the impulsive policy of someone like Mohammed bin Salman?
Well, I think now we see that China is sort of filling in this void that the United States has been leaving in parts of the world. We saw such moves in Africa, for example, China coming in and filling in this economic gap. When we say that this sort of a move is made in the United States, I think we should look closely at what's going on in the Ukraine at the moment. What's happened between with the U.S. in the Ukraine has given a sharp and a very loud message to the United States as allies that we are not an ally that you can depend on. We are not someone that you can rely on in your times of need. And this has pushed the United States as allies to look elsewhere. And I think that when we say that such a policy is made in the United States, it's sort of unintentional.
Sort of unintentional, but at the same time, it is driving the richest country in West Asia away from the lap of the United States. Don't you think that the U.S. might hit hard someplace else?
Well, yeah, absolutely. The United States is not used to hearing the word no. However, as we said, the world is watching. The world's been watching Ukraine very closely, and they've seen that, look, we cannot rely on you. We've seen you abandon a European nation, the same color as you, the same religion as you, the same morals and standings as you. So us being an Arab nation who, yes, is tied to you politically and economically, we need to start looking at other options. We saw that the U.S., at the very slightest disagreement between them and the Saudi regime, they began threatening with arms embargoes and sanctions and whatnot, and this is not the way that one will treat their allies. So I think Saudi Arabia and many other allies will soon follow the suit of Saudi Arabia and begin to look towards China and alternative partners in the world.
What's interesting to monitor, Matez, is that China is not the USA, and it cannot be bought the way that Saudi Arabia used to pay a lot of money to try and buy certain policies from the U.S. For example, China does have its own interests in the region of West Asia, especially with the Saudi regime, but it is also very keen on maintaining and strengthening its alliance and its partnership with Iran, for example, which is considered as China's prime ally against the Americans to begin with, and it is also one of its strategic partners in the Silk Road map that China's trying to draw in that specific area. Is it possible to juggle both interests in a volatile region like West Asia? I mean, we all know the hostility that the Saudi regime has for the Islamic Republic.
Well, you said it. China is not the United States. And when we say that China cannot be bought, and China is very firm on its standings, on its morals. It has very firm red lines that it draws in the sand. And when it comes to allies, the Chinese, if you want to call the Chinese government or the Chinese regime, has very rarely or maybe even not known to be one that abandons their allies for trade deals and whatnot. What we can hope to see, and especially in this upcoming summit, and given the fact that, as we said, this summit won't just be held in Riyadh for Riyadh. There will be other Arab leaders there. What we can hope to see is that maybe Beijing, as we've seen in the past, can maybe be seen as an intermediary or a bridge between Saudi Arabia and the Islamic Republic of Iran, and between other Arab countries and the Islamic Republic of Iran. We have seen in the past where China will come in and mediate between two allies that happen to be rivals, and they've come to great successes in this.
Do you think that they might have a hand in maybe bringing together the Yemenis and the Saudis to the table?
Well, we'd sure hope so. As you said, China has a vested interest in maintaining peace in the region. This is number one. And number two, it has a vested interest in giving priority to its number one ally in the region, which is the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So we can definitely at least hope that China can bring the Saudis and the Yemenis to the table. And this will be a further blow to the United States.
Well, changes are away, and and fast in the region of West Asia, especially since just 4 years ago, or even less than that, we were watching Donald Trump dancing with Saudi royals, and now is China basically invading the U.S. territory. I want to thank you very much, Mohtaz Wahwah, political commentator, for joining us to talk about this very crucial and new matter to West Asia. But please stay tuned, because next we want to see how the World Cup of Qatar is supporting none other than Palestine.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
During the past few days, the campaign of solidarity and wide sympathy with the Palestinian cause was remarkable on the sidelines of the FIFA World Cup organized by Qatar. Chanting for freedom for Palestine and raising Palestinian flags has become a scene that almost all stadiums, streets, and mass gatherings are devoid of. Perhaps this matter came as a surprise to some who believed that the Palestinian cause had lost its luster and had become one of the marginal issues for a large segment of Arabs and Muslims. World Cup fans support Palestine in this following report.
It has always been the norm for all those who are keen on supporting the Palestinian cause to open broad and comprehensive horizons for dialogue and communication with peoples and masses far from regimes and governments, to push everything that would support Palestine against the British-installed and American-protected Zionist occupation of the Arab land of Palestine. Yet Western mainstream media completely blacks out any news that comes from Palestine or in support of Palestine, and social media platforms follow suit, banning pro-Palestinian pages and accounts. But the FIFA World Cup 2022 in Qatar has been a surprise so far. During the 48th minute of the Tunisia-Australia match at the World Cup in Qatar last Saturday, Tunisian fans held up a huge flag bearing the words "Free Palestine." Moroccan fans did the same the next day during their team's game against Belgium. For Arabs and Palestinians, 48 is a key number in the memory of their national catastrophe. It refers to 1948, the year of the Nakba, when their grandparents were killed and expelled from their homeland to create a new colony for Britain called Israel. Arabs and pro-Palestinian supporters worldwide use this number to express their love and support for Palestinians. The displays of Palestinian banners by Tunisian and Moroccan fans came as Israeli TV presenters complained that Arab fans have not welcomed them at the football tournament in Qatar. Numerous videos have shown Arab fans refusing to talk to Israeli channels and expressing their support for Palestinians. Today, the World Cup in Qatar is providing an open source for Arab peoples to express their disapproval of their regime's act of normalization with the Zionist Israeli entity. However, is that enough? Is Qatar really allowing such kind of solidarity with the aim of bringing change to the official Arab regime's treachery towards the Palestinian cause? Indeed, beyond feelings of solidarity towards Palestinians, the close public alliance between Israeli politicians and corrupt Arab dictators has increased hostility towards the Zionist entity among Arab publics. But what has it done to stop the constant Israeli bombardment of Gaza, or the constant killing and incarceration of Palestinian natives in the streets of occupied Al-Quds and the West Bank? Resolving major issues does not only need campaigns of solidarity and sympathy, despite their importance. Victory over an enemy armed to its teeth does not come through campaigns and hashtags, despite their impact. Rather, Palestine needs real and sustainable action through an integrated system in which all parties participate. Any solidarity that does not reflect effectively and decisively in support of the Palestinian cause and the Palestinian people on the ground, whether on the material level, moral level, and most importantly, the military and armament level, is a solidarity that has no real benefit within it.
Now to discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Saleh Abu Azze, a regular political commentator from the West Bank on a visit to Lebanon. It's an honor to have you with us here, Mr. Abu Azze. Now, Saleh, it was significant during the past weeks to see the broad campaign of solidarity with Palestine on the sidelines of the FIFA World Cup in the state of Qatar. Yet during the same time, we saw the Al-Quds double operation happening. We saw the killing of a Palestinian native by a Zionist colonial settler from point blank happening also in occupied Palestine. And we also saw Israel bombing Gaza again. This all happened during the World Cup. So how effective was the World Cup solidarity campaign in shining light on those particular events?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. First of all, there is no doubt that the World Cup in Qatar has proven that the Arab and Islamic peoples, and even the free peoples of the world as a whole, are on one side, and the normalized regimes that do not support the Palestinian cause are in another side. We have seen the great popular interaction with the Palestinian people and the Palestinian cause, and this confirms the affiliation of the Arab and Islamic nation and the free peoples of the world towards the central cause of the Arab and Islamic world, which is the Palestinian cause. There is no doubt that this World Cup has a very important message. It is a global meeting in which all the peoples of the world, from all walks of life, religions and races, gather to affirm that the Palestinian cause is in the conscience of the nations and the conscience of the world. This is necessary for the Palestinian people. This is from one side. On the other hand, it also confirms that the Palestinian struggle continues. Since this world and the peoples of the world believe in the injustice against the Palestinian people and believe in the terrorism of the Israeli entity, it is very natural that the basic duty that the Palestinians perform is self-defense, first. And self-defense can only be attained through resistance. This resistance is a strategic choice for our Palestinian people and for everyone who stands by the Palestinian people. However, it must always be pointed out that it is unacceptable for the Palestinian people to support and sympathize with them, but not to support the resistance or to describe this resistance as terrorism or criminality, or to portray the victim in the position of the executioner. There is an Israeli executioner, and this has always been the Palestinian narrative. There is an Israeli executioner and a Palestinian victim. Hence, we saw what happened with Palestinian Mara Ammar in the Hawara region last week in occupied Palestine. This is what the world's cameras saw. This is what was monitored. In the sense that the Israeli occupation since before the Zionist gangs in 1948 and the establishment of this entity, it has been committing these crimes against the Palestinian people. However, the cameras did not capture many of these crimes. This crime appeared to the public in this way because there was a camera that documented the field execution that was practiced against Ammar, just as the thousands of individuals from our Palestinian people who perished the same way.
Well, Mr. Saleh, Palestine is still considered by many to be the central cause of the Arab and Islamic nation, as you referred just now. That was never a doubt, by the way. But yet, is it enough to promote campaigns and launch hashtags on social media, even though at a global event like that of the World Cup? I mean, what can an incarcerated Palestinian native do with a hashtag when he's in solitary confinement, and or a Palestinian in Gaza who is living under Israeli bombs? What can they benefit from a hashtag?
As we always say, all forms of Palestinian resistance must be on the table and be practiced against the Israeli occupation. Whether peaceful resistance, military resistance, media resistance, and all forms of other types of resistance. Even in military resistance, there must be popular resistance, individual resistance, and organized resistance. All of this is required in the Palestinian arena. And since this resistance in this way is required, therefore, the Arab and Islamic world and the free people of the world must also show all forms of solidarity with the Palestinian people and with the resistance of the Palestinian people. So yes, it is true that these media campaigns and media efforts are required to support the Palestinian cause and to expose the Israeli entity and publicize its terrorism and crimes, leading to perhaps its trial. But the question always remains, is that enough? I think this is not enough. just as Palestine needs a loud voice that shows the injustice being done to the Palestinian cause, it also needs the bullet that supports its resistance in order to defend our Palestinian people. These are the foundations of the conflict with the Israeli occupation, and the foundations of the issue in dealing with the Arab and Islamic depth. Therefore, our Palestinian people always talk about their lack of Arab and Islamic depth. Why? Because whoever truly supports the Palestinian resistance, and he who is entrusted with defending the Palestinian people and the Palestinian cause and repelling the aggressions of the Israeli occupation, is the axis of resistance only, under the leadership of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Iran is the one that strengthens this line, this current, this path, and this alliance with its states and parties. Iran is the one that supports the right to support the Palestinian resistance because it stands by all forms of Palestinian struggle. It stands by us in the media, financially, militarily, security-wise, and politically. Now, some Arabs, some countries, and some free people of this world do support Palestine in the media, but without the financial, military, and political support. So with all certainty, their support will remain incomplete.
Well, in less than 1 minute, Mr. Saleh, we did see how Israel felt very disappointed with what happened to its correspondents and how its colonial settlers were treated in Qatar. But will that change the Arab-Israeli normalization process that thus far has promoted the Arab regimes with zero benefits?
There was an Israeli proposal in the past, the content of which was land in exchange for peace, then the security in exchange for peace, until we reached the proposal that the Israeli wanted, which is peace in exchange for peace. However, it is true that Israel wants the peace from the Arab and Islamic regimes because they benefit from it economically, militarily, and politically. But at the same time, Israel wants popular normalization with the Arab countries and the peoples of the Arab countries. Because the entity still feels with all its factions, its government, and its settlers, all of them feel that they are a foreign entity to this region in terms of language, religion, culture, and even morals. So this strange feeling of this entity, that it wants to discover what the normalization agreements have accomplished, in the sense that it is only the Abraham Accords we are talking about, but Camp David, up to Wadi Araba, the Oslo Accords, and ending with the Abraham Accords. Especially since there is a prelude to more Arab countries that will join the train of normalization, led by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Despite Netanyahu's recent statement that Saudi Arabia is the head of the normalizers and the protector of this project. However, until this moment, it has not yet entered into the establishment of diplomatic relations with the occupying entity for issues related to feeling the public pulse and so on. So the presence of the Israelis in Qatar, which is definitely condemned, their presence is, yes, a kind of feeling the pulse for the Arab street. To know where did these agreements reach and what should be done at the level of media, politics and cultural programs to reach an advanced stage of normalization.
Well, I think that they did get their answer when everyone refused to talk to them and everyone refused to even say hello to them and everyone kept saying freedom to Palestine, and indeed that freedom will come. And thank you very much, Saleh Abu Azzeh, political commentator from the West Bank, joining us here in Beirut. Thank you for your contribution, and Awa, thank you. I hope you continue supporting Palestine, the central cause for all Muslims, all Arabs, and all free people of the world. I'll see you again next week. Salaam alaikum.
In the limelight. In Britain, union boss Mick Lynch has announced new Christmas walkouts. Industrial action will take place from Christmas Eve to the morning of December 27th, causing chaos on British Rail. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. The Daily Mail has covered this story. MPs have slammed RMT Union Baron Mick Lynch for ruining Christmas after he sparked further festive chaos by announcing more strikes from December 24th to December 27th in new wave of walkouts to cripple train services this winter. Former Levelling Up Secretary Simon Clark called the decision dreadful, while Transport Secretary Mark Harper dubbed it disappointing. Union boss Mick Lynch announced the additional dates this evening and reaffirmed the strikes in January. "I'm sure the travelling public will be really disappointed and irritated and angry," Mr. Lynch said at a press conference. But he added that there has been no improved offer presented to his union and that they have no choice as the current offer is extremely detrimental. Transport Secretary Mark Harper said, "It's incredibly disappointing that despite a new and improved deal offering job security and a fair pay rise, the RMT is not only continuing with upcoming industrial action, but has called more strikes over Christmas. The government has played its part by facilitating a fair and decent offer, but by instructing its members to reject it, the RMT has failed to play its part, and our rail network now faces more harmful disruption rather than helpful discussion." Simon Clark, the former Levelling Up Secretary, tweeted, "This is dreadful by the RMT ruining people's Christmas with an 8% pay rise over 2 years on the table and no compulsory redundancies." The railway received £16 billion, £600 per household in emergency funding during COVID, and drivers' median salary is £59,000. Staff's is £44,000. Members of the Rail, Maritime and Transport Union, RMT, will walk out from 6 p.m. on Christmas Eve until 6 a.m. on 27th of December and will press ahead with two 48-hour strikes next week. The union announced it will put the latest offer from Network Rail to its members with a recommendation to reject it. The RMT said there had been no improved offer from the train